This episode of Weekly Spooky is brought to you by Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer, available on paperback and ebook on Amazon.com. A good babysitter is hard to find, especially when they're all dead. Larkin's first night with the Babysitter's Club has her filling in for a friend that's blowing off work for a hot date. The simple little lie will have dire consequences that trigger a series of unthinkable events and spurs a killer's need for revenge. With the bodies and suspects stacking up, can Larkin unmask the Kohler slasher? Or will she become another victim of Daddy's Little Killer? From the twisted mind of Weekly Spooky writer David O'Hanlon comes the first book in the Babysitter Massacre franchise series created by me. So check it out right now. Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer, available now on ebook or paperback at Amazon.com.
What's that? You want to be scared? Come with me. You will experience tales of horror, ghosts, and death. It is not recommended for the weak at heart. Listeners in the dark. It's more fun that way. This is Weekly Spooky.
Hello, my friends. It's me, Henrik Kuto, your host and narrator, and thank you for joining me for another piece of Spooky on the Weekly right here. And I'm very excited. We have a brand new story from a brand new contributor. This is someone who has been a longtime listener and a friend of mine, and he submitted this story to weeklyspooky@gmail.com. Myself and producer Dan enjoyed the story, so we're going to be presenting it to you right here in just a moment, but I do want to take a second and say thank you so much. Our Patreon has been growing. It's amazing. I really appreciate it. And also, someone anonymously tipped us a lot of money. And I'm not saying I need people to tip the podcast a lot of money, but if you are feeling generous and you enjoy the show and you want to let us know how much you like it, you can write us an email at weeklyspooky@gmail.com or go to weeklyspooky.com. There is a tip jar and there is a Patreon. Those are great ways to let us know you love the show. But of course, really all I ask in the entire world is that you subscribe and maybe, just maybe, tell a friend or an enemy about the show. But tonight we've got something a little different. We've dealt in a lot of urban legends. We've dealt in a lot of folklore. But never quite in this direction. We've never really dealt with Nordic tradition. Nordic traditions are kind of alien to me. And I find them really fascinating because, on the outside, kind of like Grimm's fairy tales, they kind of seem cute. But on the inside, well, there's some darkness afoot, my friends. So without further ado, let's go to the story. For the Mother, by Mark Shields. Astrid's newly married grandparents had immigrated to America from a small Scandinavian village as teenagers, a lifetime before she was conceived. In a similarly small California town, they opened an even smaller general store, which grew just enough to support them and their one child, a girl named Sinove. The two of them worked very hard, and when their only child grew up and married a fine young man from the city by the bay, they bought a small cabin in the nearby mountains on the lake. After a life of hard work and the birth of their first grandchild, they retired to the small cabin. Thanks to her grandfather, Astrid had always loved Norse mythology. Growing up, she'd spent most of her summers with her grandparents by that quiet lake. Her grandfather took it upon himself to tell Astrid the many legends he brought with him from his childhood home. She loved him telling and retelling her fantastic tales as they sat by the bonfire each summer night. He told her tales such as Sif and her golden hair, Sigurd and the dragon, and Thor's fishing trip. He seemed to know them all, and when he inevitably retold her a story some night months later, they were always nearly identical. He retold them as if he were relaying history. He retold them with passion. He retold them like he believed them, and she remembered every word. Of these stories, her favorite was always the death of Baldur, the tragic tale of how Odin's wife Frigga's favorite son, Baldur, was killed by his blind brother Hodur, aided by her adopted son Loki. In the tale, a jealous Loki put the arrow in the hand of Hodur that killed Baldur the Beautiful. She always wept by the time it ended, forever hoping that this time, Baldur would survive. After high school, she applied and was accepted at Stanford, where she chose her major, actuarial science, as a way to ensure future financial success. Although interesting to her, she wanted something a bit more lighthearted to break up the difficult class schedule. On a whim, she decided to take an elective in the spring semester of her junior year called Early Scandinavian Folklore and Mythology. This class soon became the highlight of her week. At first, it was the fact that her knowledge of Scandinavian folklore rivaled that of her professor. She became a textbook example of a subject matter expert for the course, and it made her very happy that the other students asked her for help often. She seemed always to be the first to answer questions in discussions and to have the last word when it mattered. Astrid loved the class as it was a way to always feel like she was close to her summer home and to help solidify a rather high GPA. This unintentional mental domination of the other students went on for nearly half the semester when her world changed forever. A handsome young student started to audit the class and immediately put everyone's knowledge in that hall to shame. He usurped her position at the top of the class by having the ability to fill in holes of every legend they studied, no matter the obscurity of it. The mysterious new student was not only well-versed in Scandinavian mythology, he was what one would call a perfect physical specimen. In his usual attire of t-shirts and cargo shorts, one could see an insanely muscular body that was only highlighted by his long, blonde, flowing locks and sky-blue eyes. To her girlish delight, he introduced himself to her one day after class. It took her, by her own estimation, a good 60 seconds before she was able to respond. As he introduced himself as Baldur and looked into her eyes, her first thought was, "Yes, you are a god." When Astrid finally spoke, all her timid voice could say was her name. Astrid. "Yes, you are divinely beautiful," he said, and when he asked her to walk with him, she was literally helpless to say no. That afternoon, as they walked around the campus talking, she thought to herself that she was falling in love with a man she had just met. She didn't know how this was possible, but she knew it was true. That night, she lost her virginity to this god among men, and less than a month later, they were married. From that point on, they were bound for life. Astrid was glad to be finally meeting Baldur's family. Although they had been married since last spring, this winter trip had been their first chance to come together. During the 8-hour drive from Stanford to his family's homestead near Mount Whitney, her excitement grew. "Are we there yet?" Not taking his eyes off the winding mountain road, Baldur said, "Astrid, we are officially 5 minutes closer than we were when you asked me the same question 5 minutes ago." Running her hand down his powerful arm, she cooed, "I know, it's just that I've never met your family, and you've told me so little about them." "We're just like most families. We fight, but love each other. Mom is overbearing, Dad is solemn, and my brothers are out to kill me if I don't watch out. You see? A normal family dynamic. We should be at the cabin soon." She glanced at the odometer and smiled, knowing that they were very close. She giggled. "Only about 5 miles out." "Correct," was all he said as he turned up a driveway and drove under a stone arch emblazoned with their family name, Borson. As they pulled around the last corner and the home came into view, Astrid was stunned. He said they had money, but the home that sat before her was at least 20,000 square feet. "How can your family afford this? You mentioned money, but this looks like money should not be a problem for your great-great-grandkids." Baldur pulled into the 8-car garage and said, "It won't be. We are very financially secure." After he hopped out of the car, he swung around and grabbed her door. "Welcome home." She smiled and followed him in. As they entered the living room, his parents sat, sipping what appeared to be iced tea. "Mother, father, we're finally here." His dad stood and helped his pregnant wife to her feet. "Are we the last to get here?" "Yep. Your brothers are downstairs preparing for later. This must be the wife." "Mother, father, meet Astrid. Astrid, this is my father, Odin, and my mother, Frigga." Astrid extended her hand. "Great to meet you. Baldur has told me so much about you." "Come now, dear, we're family now. Give your new mother a hug. Reaching out, Frigga gave Astrid a hug, and Odin followed suit. While still holding her, Odin asked if she liked the house. How could I not? It's the most beautiful home I've ever seen. Thank you. The family has been working on it for a while now. It was my father's and his father before him. When I die, it will get passed on to the next generation. This place is what you would call the family home. Releasing the hug, Astrid replied, Well, it's truly breathtakingly lovely. And it truly is great to meet Baldur's parents. Hush, dear, said Odin. We are your parents as well now. Baldur, let's go help your brothers downstairs. Leave the women here to get acquainted. Pointing. After you, father. As the two men left the room, Frigga grabbed Astrid's arm. Come, child, let's get a drink. As they walked, Astrid asked if everyone in the family was named after a Nordic god. No, just the three of us. My other two sons are Larry and Christopher. Not as interesting as Baldur, but still good names. Now come, sit. Drink some mead. We cracked open a barrel. I will warn you, though. It'll kick you on your bum. Astrid walked over and grabbed a mug off the coffee table. What brand is this? Borsen. We make it ourselves. Obviously you guys make it yourself. You're Nordic gods. Astrid took a drink and was amazed. This is incredible. Thank you. Now come sit before you fall. We have so much to talk about. Astrid sat after taking another sip. Her face was already getting warm. Now, Frigga, or should I call you Mother? Call me Mother, that is what I am. Okay, Mother. I don't mean to be rude, but I don't think you should be drinking. And why is that? Well, because of the baby. Research shows, cutting her off and rubbing her own belly, Frigga said, I can assure you this child is perfectly fine. I drank with all my children, and you can see how they turned out. But nothing. Our family all drank the mead and have given birth in this very home. Astrid was sure she had heard her right. Europeans had not even gotten to California until the 1800s, and as impressive as the home was, over 1,000 years was a mistake spoken by a drunk old woman. Frigga took another drink of her mead and let out a sharp, quick cry. Chuckling, she said, The baby wants to join the world soon. Either that, or she wants more mead. You're an amazing woman. How is it possible at your age you even conceived? How old are you? I have so many questions. I'm so sorry if I stepped on any toes. Nonsense. No toes were stepped on. You are family now, and as family, you are free to know these things. This body is 84 years old, and the child will be born tonight, I would guess. But shouldn't you go to a hospital? No offense, a woman your age having a baby is incredible, but complications make it far too dangerous to do here. Put down that drink and let me call you an ambulance. Finishing another mug, Frigga replied, You will do no such thing, child. All my sons were born here. This body knows its job, and it has never failed. Standing to get another drink, Frigga continued, Baldur said he had found the perfect wife, strong and independent, and I have to agree, we are a powerful family, and you are now a part of us. Before Frigga could fill her mug, Odin came back into the room. It's time, my dear. The food is on the table, and left the room as he had entered. Frigga said, Splendid, just splendid, holding out her old hands. Now, child, help an old pregnant woman to dinner. We have prepared a special meal just for this occasion. Not knowing what to say, Astrid got up and helped Frigga down the stairs to the dining room. The dining room was breathtaking. The logs were stacked side by side and on end perpendicular to all other logs she had seen so far. On one wall was a huge stone fireplace that held small trees burning at a temperature that would have made walking into the room unbearable, were it not for a large opening in a side wall. The opening looked out upon the mountains and the valley below, and the view was breathtaking. The four chandeliers were made from the bones of dozens of animals, with each arm holding candles large enough to burn for days. From the wax collected under the chandeliers, Astrid guessed that hundreds, if not thousands, of candles had lit this room. A 30-foot table was filled with an unbelievable variety of food, and the centerpiece of the table was a roasted goat sitting on a huge platter. As the women entered the room, the men all stood up and toasted them. For the mother! And downed their full mugs. Odin grabbed his wife and walked her to the head of the table, taking a seat at her right hand. Baldur grabbed Astrid and did the same with her at the other end. Frigga stood and said, By the gods, let us feast, and sat back down. Larry and Chris stood and served the feast. Larry drew a pitcher from a huge barrel sitting in the corner and walked around the table filling all their mugs. Chris carved the meat in the middle of the table in a manner that was more resembled to ripping than cutting. The two husbands went around the table collecting food for their wives. When the plates were set in front of the women, Astrid thought a 300-pound lumberjack would have a problem putting a dent in this meal. She looked around for some utensils, but saw none save for the large carving knife Chris had used to cut and rip the meat. Frigga, on the other end of the table, grabbed food off her plate and ate with complete loss of manners. With a mouthful of food, Frigga yelled across the table to Astrid, "Eat and drink, my dear. I promise you will not eat another feast like this for a long time." Astrid looked down at her plate and picked up a piece of cheese. She took a bite and was enthralled by what she tasted. Next, she grabbed a piece of the goat and again could not believe how good it was. She washed it down with the mead and stopped. "What are these spices? I've never tasted anything like these." Taking only a short break from stuffing food into her face, Frigga responded, "They're herbs from a long time forgotten. Now eat." Astrid continued to eat. The meal was like no other she had ever had. All the foods were exceptional. As if reading her mind, Larry walked over and topped off her mug. Any gratitude she may have felt was lost in the moment she grabbed her mug. Mead, cheese, meat, mead, vegetable, meat, mead, oblivion. During the feast, Astrid lost all consciousness, thought, and in oblivion she passed out from far too much to drink. Even as Astrid's body began to slowly return to her control, her mind was instantly aware of itself. Feeling both an extreme cold wind and unbelievable heat at the same time, she opened her eyes and tried to adjust to the sight of a huge fire burning halfway between the low balcony she sat outside on and the mountain cliff over which a blizzard wind was blowing. As she tried to stand, she found herself tied to her chair by a rough hemp rope. Her fear was instantaneous and all-consuming. She screamed to be let up, but was ignored by four shadowy figures standing nearby. While looking around for any way to free herself, she noticed that the four hooded figures were standing in front of Frigga, who was laying on her back tied to a wooden table. Her mouth was uncovered, so her screams could be heard if anyone was listening. The wind brought the chants of the men, for the mother, again and again. This mantra, punctuated by Frigga screaming, "Get it out! By the gods now! It's the time, my children! Now get it out!" One man walked between Frigga's legs and another moved around her head. From where she was laid, Astrid could see it was Odin between her legs, but could not tell who went to her head. Astrid screamed, "Untie me, you assholes!" The men ignored all she said. Odin raised his hand and all went silent for a moment. He spoke in a voice more powerful than she imagined this old man could produce. "It is the midwinter solstice, and the time for a new mother has arrived." The other three men resumed chanting, for the mother, and continued getting louder and louder as time went on. Odin produced the large carving knife from under his cloak. Passing it around, each son cut Frigga as the knife was passed to him. Frigga screamed with every cut. Stunned to silence, Astrid could only stare as this madness unfolded in front of her. As the knife returned to Odin, he spoke again, and the other three men went silent. "The midwinter solstice has come again, and with a new mother chosen. Her old body shall be renewed as all that is old shall become new again. May this child be acceptable to our goddess Frigga. May many seasons pass in the new. May we find a splendor by her hands." The three sons each knelt and kissed their mother's weeping, naked body. As they stood, each repeated, "For the mother." Without warning, Odin sliced Frigga open from her pelvis to just below the ribs, opening her womb. Frigga screamed in pain. The son at her head took the knife still in her body and completed the cut from ribs to throat, loudly breaking each one as he cut through it. Frigga was still crying out in pain as Odin took the daughter from her belly, and the son took her heart from her chest. Two of the sons picked up the dead woman and walked into the pyre with it. One moment they were there, the next, all that was left were their screams of pain. Even if they had tried to escape, the heat rendered that impossible. Odin, carrying the child, walked to the edge of the cliff. Standing there, he raised the child in his old shaking hand and began speaking in a strange language. "At the dawn of a new millennium, we speak. det vintalveri varin spafra manje manner siden, in dok skal fa night liv og hav var gammel skal blingjen brennen den gammel og nei skal stig askes, blot til blot for mor. As he finished speaking to the knight, he lowered the child and kissed it. With a smile on his face, I love you, Frigga, now and always. Standing for just a moment more, he stepped off the cliff, with the infant, into oblivion. The wind coming over the cliff stopped, as suddenly as it had begun. Astrid could not see what had happened to Odin and the child from her vantage point. The sudden stillness did nothing to allay her fears, and with a soft voice she began to plead with the cloaked figure standing next to the sacrificial table. Growing louder, her pleas went unnoticed by the motionless man. After many long moments, everything changed. A wind so powerful that it suffocated the blazing pyre flames and brought about a night only lit by the full moon. It struck the cloaked man and knocked him back to Astrid's feet. He was still, motionless, and Astrid was able to finally confirm what she already knew. Her husband had killed Frigga. He had killed his own mother, and he had left her tied to a chair to witness these horrors. Screaming at him and begging for answers, he finally broke his trance. Rising, with his mother's heart still in his hand and the knife in the other, he turned and closed the distance between himself and his wife. Astrid was helpless to stop what came next. Balder took the still warm heart and forced it into her mouth, cutting off her cries. With savagery she thought impossible from her sweet husband, he forced her mouth closed on the heart. Her teeth severed off a chunk and held it in her mouth. Her rational thought was, that flavor, it's Frigga's blood. She greedily devoured it and pleaded for more from the man she loved. He cut her free and dropped the knife. She stood and took the once beating heart from his hand and said, Jegtar det hargeret av min or. Jeg lever avet, jeg spesser det, jeg skal blit det jenner jug for more. Before devouring it in ecstasy. A short time later, the husband leaned over and picked up his sleeping bride. Carrying her inside, he took her to the new moon bed. As he stood watching her, she awoke with a smile on her face. Turning her head, she saw her husband and exclaimed, Odin, my Odin, oh, how I love thee. Her husband smiled back at her and said, Frigga, you are so beautiful. I love you, Frigga, now and always, for the mother. The end. Don't you love a happy ending? You know, a real family story. So thank you so much, Mark Shields, for sending that story in. We really enjoyed it, and we hope you, the audience, did too. And we hope to hear some more stories from Mark in the near future. And if you have a story you'd like us to consider for the program, you can go to weeklyspooky.com and find every possible way that you can contact us. And I just want to say thank you. There has been an influx of new Patreon backers. Thank you so much. The Patreon really is what allows me to keep pumping out this podcast, especially as I have a somewhat spotty employment and revenue stream right now. So thank you so much for the backers, and especially a huge thank you to our Patreon podcast boosters. These are folks who kick in a little extra coin just to hear their names on the show, and they are Karen Wiemet, Jeff and George Hilton, Craig Cohen, Rob Fields, and Kevin Fry. Thank you guys so much for the support. I really do appreciate it, and I hope you guys out there are doing well. The new year is starting off kind of interesting, so we'll have to see where it goes, but I can tell you, no matter how weird, no matter how bizarre, no matter how uneasy the new year is, I promise you, you will have a brand new creepy story every single Wednesday right here on Weekly Spooky, and that promise you can take to the bank. Now, of course, once you get to the bank, they will not know what to do with that promise, but it is a legitimate promise, and I mean that. We are not taking any time off anytime soon, even with how dry my sinuses are from the cold winter. I'm still here and ready to rock. So anyway, my friends, I'm going to get out of here. Please subscribe, head over to weeklyspooky.com, maybe throw us a tip if you don't mind, or get a t-shirt. But for myself, for my producer Dan Wilder, for our composer Ray Mattis, I hope you all stay safe, but also stay spooky, and I look forward to talking at you all later. But not that later, just 1 week from right now, my friends.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to find your way back next week. But for now, you are safe. Trust me.